නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ Dear friends in Dhamma, dear venerable brother, so we were discussing Brahmajala Sutta, and we almost covered the various different kinds of wrong views. Which are talking about the past. Now we discussed already that people sometimes are meditators and they have Pubbe Nivasanusati Jnana who can reflect their past lives, and depending on how long that they can reflect, there are different kinds of Sassatavada, what we call the eternalism. And certain others actually are depending on their mere logic. They are reasoning, and again they do some logical thinking, reasoning, and they also come to this kind of different eternalist views. And again, Ekaccha Satsatavada, again we discuss kind of partial eternalism and partial not eternalism. And basically they sometimes say, okay, certain beings are eternal, certain others are not eternal, so they have some sort of a partial eternalism. Then we discuss about Anta Anantavada, so depending on the orientation, depending on the space-wise, how long all this whole world exists, either it is depending on it's a kind of finite space or infinite space. So likewise, with respect to the past lives, they come up with various kinds of definition, different kinds of views. And then Amaravikkhepavada, kind of endless hedging, so they are without giving a proper answer, so they do some sort of hedging. And there are also different four types of wrong views we discussed. And then Aditya-samuppannavada, that is where without giving a proper reason, without giving causes, so they give some sort of a view telling that everything is happening by mere chance, sort of fortuitous arising, where there is no particular reason, but immediately, all of a sudden, things are happening. There is no reason, a kind of chance is there. Kind of random chance is there. So depending on that, two views we have discussed. Almost actually we have covered those 18 different views. They are speculators about the past, and we started the future related speculations, speculators about the future. And we already discussed about the Sannyivada, 18 or 16 of them, where they consider, okay, this body will survive, so the mind will survive, and it is going to have some sort of a post-mortem survival, even though the body perishes, so the consciousness may survive in the future. And depending on whether it has a form or it does not have a form, so there are four such categories: healthy and conscious and material, healthy and conscious and immaterial, or both material and immaterial, or neither material nor immaterial. So depending on the body, there are four categories. Then we discuss whether this survived consciousness is it finite or infinite, both finite and infinite, or neither finite nor infinite. So then again another four is there. And then since this is a we are talking about a sannyi, that is conscious survival, so this consciousness, does it have some sort of perception? Is it with a uniform perception or varied kind of perception, or limited perception, unlimited perception? So again another four categories are there. And then with respect to the feeling tone, there are another four: whether this survived consciousness, is it happy, unhappy, both happy and unhappy, or neither happy nor unhappy. So likewise, altogether there are 16 wrong views discussed under the Sanyivad. So everywhere, the important thing here is that talking about some sort of consciousness. So this survived person, whoever, is conscious. And then the other one, another eight, is they are non-conscious. Even though this survival happens, so this survived being is very much unconscious. Doesn't have a sanya, doesn't have a perception. So therefore, perception related four and the feeling related four are not available if we discuss with respect to the previous 16. So therefore, there are eight not available and then only eight available. So with respect to the form, material, immaterial, both, neither, then there are four. And again, whether this form is finite, infinite, both finite and infinite, neither finite nor infinite, another four. So altogether, eight non-conscious survival, which is talking about the future lives. So at the end of the death, so this some sort of a survival is there, but that survival is sort of non-conscious, and so they are coming up with eight. Now we already discussed all these, and then today we can start with the rest. Actually, we need to understand another point, that is, it is not that everybody or each and every category someone is talking, but here Buddha is giving all possibilities. Now 62 possibilities are there. That doesn't mean that during the Buddha's time all these 62 existed, but Buddha, through his knowledge, through his understanding, he's saying, okay, these are the possibilities. Either some one group may capture, go through one of these kind of wrong view, or many of these kinds of wrong views. But other than this, no more. So that's another affirmation that Buddha comes into, where he affirm, okay, these are the possibilities, and other than this, we can't come up with another possibility. So this is a very interesting area, in the sense that if we come up with any sort of a view, then we can check whether it is included in this 62. If it is, then it is a wrong view. So in that way, we have a complete, comprehensive 62 wrong views. And whenever someone is talking about a particular view, we can verify whether it is included in this 62, because these are the maximum, these are the total views that ultimately a person can hold on to. And then neva sanyi na sanyi vada, neither conscious nor non-conscious survival. So this is very similar to the non-conscious survival, in the sense that here the difference is the survived being is neither conscious nor non-conscious. So they are also, since it is neither conscious nor non-conscious, so the perception part and the feeling tone part is not available. So what is available is some sort of a form, which is after death, it is healthy, neither conscious nor non-conscious, and that form is material. Or that form is immaterial. Or that form is material and immaterial. Or neither material nor immaterial. So likewise, depending on the physical aspect, there are four divisions, four categories. And then whether this survived being, is he antava, that means he has certain limit, or infinite, there is no limit. And both, finite and infinite, neither finite nor infinite. So likewise, there are eight altogether, neither conscious nor unconscious, neva sanyi na sanyi vada. So these are another eight coming as a survival at the end of the life. So there's a kind of a survival they are talking. So there are eight categories. And here also Buddha mentioned, okay, so I have recognized all this, I have understood the peril in it, and so I have gone beyond that, I have understood more than this, but even that I didn't grasp. And so that is, I have seen what is more profound, and which is hard to see, hard to understand, more peaceful, excellent, which are beyond mere thought and only can be experienced by the wise. And Vishta Tathagata, having realized them by his own wisdom, proclaims and about which those who would truthfully praise the Tathagata would rightly speak. Now, here's another category, another group, another eight wrong views that Buddha mentioned. Okay, these I have understood, and I have gone beyond them. I understood if whoever grasps any of these views may end up with this sort of a destination. So I have understood that also. And without attaching to any of these, without holding on to any of these, I am completely liberated. So basically, so after telling that, okay, this is something that if people want to really praise the Buddha, so this is one possibility, one important characteristic, one profound aspect that Buddha to be praised. Probably you can remember the story behind this whole thing, where two people start following Buddha and the Sangha while they are traveling from Rajagaha to Nalanda, and Suppiya and his student Brahmadatta. So Suppiya was actually completely talking ill of the Buddha, Dhamma and the Sangha, while on the other hand Brahmadatta is trying to defend. He's talking about the qualities of the Buddha. Now basically on these two aspects, Buddha's advice to the monks is don't get upset, don't get worried or disheartened when someone is blaming or criticizing. You need to maintain an equanimous mind, a balanced mind, and you can carefully recognize whether what they are talking is correct or wrong. Accordingly, you can give a comment if possible. On the other hand, when someone is praising, don't get elated, don't get completely uplifted. If so, you can't properly recognize what they are talking. And if something is truly mentioned, available, then you can accept it. Yes, those are available qualities. Or otherwise, you can simply say, okay, these are exaggerations. These are not really available. So likewise, Buddha's advice is a kind of a mature way of looking at all these different accusations, praises, blames, rather than getting sort of agitated. Now, with that respect, Buddha is now explaining all these 62 different views. Based on them, actually, people might get into stuck in certain wrong views. And on the other hand, whenever people are praising or blaming, they are talking only about the morality aspects, the sila. But Buddha say, okay, that is not the real thing that Buddha to be praised. But these 62 views, these are the sort of traps that even the spiritual people ultimately get hooked up, ultimately get tangled. So these are the ones actually Buddha has seen his noble wisdom, and then he was able to overcome them, release from them, and he's explaining them, okay, these are certain traps available in the spiritual path, so don't get caught with them. So these are the points that he say, okay, worthy of paying respect. These are the things worthy of paying certain praise to the Buddha, because he understood all these and without being caught up with them, so he was able to release himself. And then we get into the Uccedavada. So this is actually another interesting part. We already discussed briefly when we were discussing Udana Sutta. Now Uccedavada, annihilationism. Now Uccedavada sato sattasya uccedam vinasam vibhavam panyapinti. So important thing here is that they accept an existing being. There is a being, there is a person, there is an individual. So after death, what's going to happen to this particular individual? What's going to happen to this soul? Now, one group is saying, okay, since this self is material, composed of four great elements, the product of mother and father, at the breaking of the body, it is completely annihilated and perishes. So they are sort of materialists. Not only they are talking about annihilationism, actually they are particularly materialist. So they don't talk about any mind and all that. So they consider, okay, this body ultimately going to perish at the end of the death. So therefore there is nothing more exist. So the whole thing get annihilated. Does not exist after death. So self is annihilated after the death. So it's kind of, even today, many people are believing like that. They don't believe in the future birth, next birth, possibility of other immaterial kind of aspects, continuing the sort of wandering in samsara. And sometimes they also get caught thinking that there's an existing self. But these people who are materialists, they simply say, okay, this body is currently living, but at the end of the death, it's going to completely perish, completely annihilate. So this is one wrong view. Rupi Chatu Mahabhutiko. So it is depending on the four elements, this rupa, this form, and it's going to end at the end of the death. After the death, there is no existence. There is no survival. And then another person is telling, okay, another say, there is a self, as you say, I don't deny it, but that self is not wholly annihilated. But there is a possibility that you can attain a divine material sense sphere self, which you need to attain. And that actually not particularly mentioned in this part, but all these other six annihilationist views are not immediately available. You need to attain them. You need to work hard. You need to practice in order to attain to that one of them. And as a result of that, you are going to annihilate yourself. Now, one important aspect of this category is that whoever the practitioners going through this practice, they want to finish it. They want to finish themselves. They want to annihilate themselves. So we'll come into that later. So one group is telling, okay, there is a divine kind of self existing and you need to practice and attain to that. If so, if you are able to do that, then even though the body perishes, this self is completely going to annihilate. So therefore, annihilation going to happen, because you are able to attain that whatever the divine self, and which is still kamavachara, still material, belong to the sense sphere. And anyway, since you are there, ultimately, after the death, there is no existence, the whole thing going to annihilate. So it's a wrong view, which is available under the Uchedavada. Then another group is telling, yes, what you say is also true, but whoever that divine material sense sphere self is not going to annihilate. You need to go beyond that. If you are able to achieve a complete manomaya sort of self, which is completely mind-made divine self, if you are able to attain that, so that is the way to annihilate yourself. So they are talking about another wrong view. Then the next one, they are saying, okay, another self which is bypassing entirely beyond bodily sensations. Now they are going to the arupa, to the immaterial, where entirely beyond bodily sensations, by the disappearance of all the sense resistance and by non-attraction to the perception of diversity, they are going to merge with the infinity of space, what we call the akasa nanchayatana. One needs to practice hard and they have to attain the akasa nanchayatana. So when you are able to attain that, after the death, there is no existence because this self going to annihilate. Even though the body perishes, this particular self, that is Akash, where your self is now attained Akasa Nanchayatana, so that is going to annihilate. Another one is saying, no, it is not enough. You need to attain the Vinyananchayatana, sphere of infinite consciousness. If you are able to attain that, then you are able to annihilate yourself. Another one is telling, no, that is also not enough. You need to go to nothingness. That is the Akinchanyayatana. If you are able to attain that, after the breaking of body, so this self is going to annihilate. So the whole thing going to annihilate. Another one is telling, the sixth, seventh one you can understand in the same order. Okay, you need to attain the Neva Sanyana Sanyayatana. Then only you are able to completely annihilate yourself. Now, as I mentioned earlier, so the important thing, as Venerable Bhikkhu Anālayo highlights here, is that all these are attained through a particular mode of practice, particular mode of conduct. You can't immediately come to a sort of mundane, even jhana. You need to practice for that. Even if you want to attain any kind of arūpa jhana, you need to practice. The very first one is simply a materialism, so you don't need to practice anyway. That's the very first annihilationist view. But all the other six are depending on the practice, depending on the meditation. So one needs to practice, and then only one is able to attain a divine self, maybe a complete unlimited space, that is the Akasa Nanchayatana related self, Vinyananchayatana related self, Akinchanyayatana related self, Neva Sanyana Asanyayatana related self. Now all are different kinds of jhanic attainments. But these people believe, okay, if I am able to attain that, I am going to annihilate. And his wish is also to annihilate himself. Probably they have found, okay, living in this world is difficult, or all these troubles are there, I am getting sick and all that problems are there. If after the death I am going to completely annihilate, so then everything is finished, everything will end. So they have a particular theme, as we previously also discussed, may I not be for me, may it not be for me, I shall not be and it will not be for me. What is called no chasang, no chamesiya, na bhavissami, na me bhavissatiti. So particularly they have this kind of a motto, okay, all this let it not available for me, may I not be, may it not be for me, whatever resources, whatever this body, whatever perceptions, may it not be for me. So that means let it completely annihilate at the death. I shall not be and it will not be for me. So whatever belonging to me, let everything perish, everything disappear, everything annihilate. At the death, nothing will going to exist. Complete annihilationism. Now, this is the kind of a motto they have. So they have such a wish. So they are promoting that. But the one first group is telling, okay, it is happening automatically because nothing exists other than this material form. So therefore, at the end of, after the death, nothing exists. So it is anyway annihilated. Materialism. And then starting with wrong view 52 to 57, all that requires a certain amount of practice. While keeping that motto in their mind, okay, they are practicing. So assume that they attain this so-called, divine kind of sense fear self, and then they say, okay, going to annihilate, possible to annihilate now. Someone says, okay, it is not enough, you need to attain manomaya, mental divine self, mind made self, so then only you are able to annihilate yourself. Another one is saying that is also not enough, you need to attain the Akasa Nanchayatana, giving up all the material rupee body related sensations, you need to go beyond that, and all the sense resistance has to be disappeared. Whatever the impingements coming through senses, you have to go away from that. So that's how you are going to attain the, say, akasananchayatana. If you are able to do that, then yes, you are going to annihilate yourself. Another group is saying that is also not enough. You need to get into the vijnananchayatana, that is the infinite consciousness, then you are able to annihilate yourself. Another group is saying that is also not enough. You need to attain to akinchanyayatana, then you are able to annihilate yourself. The last group is saying, okay, you need to attain neither perception nor non-perception, neva sanya na sanyayatana. If so, you are able to annihilate yourself. Now, these are the seven ways that annihilationism can come up. Now, all other possibilities. So, whoever talking about annihilationism, they have to adhere to one of them. And Buddha affirms, okay, there is nothing beyond this. These are the seven possibilities. These are the maximum. One, either they have to go through, accept one of these or many of these, nothing more than this. So that's a, in a way, very important part, because if there is something more, then we have to invent. But Buddha affirms, okay, these are the seven possibilities with respect to annihilationism. There is nothing more above this, more than this, and I have seen it. I have understood all this, and I didn't grasp any of these, and I have gone beyond this, and I have understood more than this, which is more profound, hard to see, difficult to understand, peaceful, excellent. One can't come to that by mere thought, mere reasoning, and it has to be understood by the wise, and which the Buddha has understood by himself. And then he is explaining that, proclaiming that, and that is something profound that truthfully, if one wants to praise the Buddha, is something very important, valuable, noble characteristics that the Buddha to be praised. As I mentioned, the important thing here also, so they are believing of an existing self, existing person, existing I, existing individual. So that individual is the one going to completely annihilate. That individual, if completely material, then it is going to annihilate, because there is no any other mental aspect. Another six groups is telling, okay, this individual has to practice and has to attain some sort of a divine mental state, using which he can annihilate himself. So existing self is always emphasized. There is an existing self. There is an individual. There is a person. There is I. So that is the underneath the wrong perception, in a way, available in all these different wrong views. Okay, and then we can go to the last part, which is coming under the aparanta kappika, speculators about the future. Now, in this part, actually, they are talking about supreme nirvana here and now. This is also interesting, because as Buddhists, we are also talking about nibbana here and now. This group is also talking about nibbana here and now. Important difference is, here also they are talking about an existing person, existing individual. And that individual, how he is going to attain Nibbana? Existing individual. Sato sattasya parama ditta dhamma Nibbana panyapinti. So this is a very noble, or we can say completely available Nibbana, complete cessation. And it's available right now, in this very life, to this particular existing person. Sato sattasya. So existing person is there, existing being is there. So that existing being going to attain Nibbana. So this is how they are explaining now. So the wrong view 58. Panchahi kama gunehi samappito. samangi bhuto parichari. Now he is also some sort of a materialist, so he is taking, okay, if he is able to satisfy himself to the maximum, so if it is he is able to satisfy his senses, basically he has eye, using eye he can see all different sceneries so that he can satisfy himself, gratify himself. He has ears, he can listen to beautiful music, and with that he can pacify himself, satisfy himself. And then he has nose, using which he can smell pleasant odors as much as possible. He has a tongue, using which he can taste various delicacies. And he has the body, using which he can go through all the possible luxurious sensations. And that is how he is going to attain Nibbana in this very life. So certain people, even today, they are following like that. So that is their main goal. Okay, as much as possible, I need to satisfy myself, satisfy my body, satisfy my senses, simply following the pleasure principle. So that is what is mostly available in the West. We are simply believing this materialism, as much as possible, satisfying senses, maybe even with the expense of the other's comfort, somehow they are want to satisfy themselves. And that they consider as the, okay, this is the maximum I can get in this life, this is the Nibbana, in this very life. So this is one wrong view. And another thing is that these people, not only they believe in it, they also teach it to the others. They spread that wrong view to the others. And then another wrong view. Someone is saying, sir, there is such a self as you say, I don't deny it, but that is not where the self realizes the highest Nibbana here and now. Why? Because this sense desires are impermanent, painful and subject to change, and it may transform and arise sorrow, lamentation, all that problems. That means this body-related satisfaction is not something permanent. It can change. It can even take you certain worries. It can cause you lamentation. So you can't depend on that. So that is not the Paramanibbana. That is not the supreme kind of Nibbana you can attain in this very life. Rather, when this self detached from sense desires, detached from unwholesome states, enters and abides in the first jhana. Now they are talking about jhana. So they are meditators. Okay, they simply say, okay, this mere sense gratification is not enough. If you want to attain Nibbana, you need to practice, and there is something called first jhana. You need to attain that first jhana, where you need to abandon all the sense pleasures, sense desires. Temporarily, you need to subside them, and you need to practice. As a result of the practice, you have a particular state of mind which has the applied thought. Vitakka is available. You have the sustained mind. Vichara is available. And though your mind is somewhat pleasurable and somewhat elated, somewhat satisfied, so you are going through a certain amount of happiness, and mind is well concentrated. So these five qualities are there. Vitakka, vichara, piti, sukha, ekagata. Five jhana angas are there. So one has attained the first jhana. So this is how you are going to attain the Nibbana. So they basically consider first jhana as the Nibbana. And then another group is saying, okay, that is not enough. First jhana is not the real Nibbana because it has certain drawbacks, because again and again your mind has to attain to that whatever the object, and again the mind has to maintain, sustain again and again with that object. So this is a friction. These are drawbacks. This is not good. This is not enough. So you need to overcome even that. You need to abandon that vitakka, abandon that applied mind. You need to just fix your mind without doing any sort of sustenance. Rather, the mind has to be completely fixed. And so the jhana has to be further concentrated, more deep. And so you need to attain the second jhana by abandoning vitakka and vichara. Abandoning thinking, or rather the thinking, we can say applied mind, and the sustained mind. You need to abandon those two, which are more into the hindrances. So you need to abandon that. After abandoning that, you can attain the second jhana, that is more sublime and more fixed. There is a more inner tranquility is available, oneness of the mind is available, and so that is the Nibbana. So they consider second jhana as the Nibbana. So that becomes their goal. Again and again they are attaining that, again and again they are abiding in it, associating in it, even in this life. So they say, okay, this is the Nibbana I can attain in this very life. That's another wrong view that Buddha explained here. And then the next one. Now you can understand the next one also. They are talking about, okay, this rupture available in the second jhana. Whatever the delight, whatever the happiness, pleasure available in the second jhana is somewhat acceleration. Some amount of friction is there. That is some gross sort of happiness is there. You need to abandon that. So if you are able to abandon that, then you are attaining the third jhana, which is more sublime, and fair amount of contentment is there. It's a more mature kind of happiness. Previous one, the second jhana is somewhat gross, but here it is more sublime, more soft, and more contentment is available, more maturity is there. And this is the Ditta Dhamma Nibbana. Tatiyan jhanam upasampajja vihirati ettavata ko boho ayam atta parama Ditta Dhamma Nibbanam pattu. In this very life, one can attain Nibbana by attaining the third jhana. So this is the wrong view this particular group can have. And of course, the last one, the 62nd wrong view, is talking about the fourth jhana. They say, okay, even the third jhana is not good, because whatever that happiness, that joy, that is also somewhat gross. You need to even alleviate that, you need to even abandon that, keep the mind in complete equanimity, complete calmness, complete balance, without getting to any of the extremes, any of the sides of pleasure and pain. So you need to completely abandon pleasure and pain. The mind has to be in the complete equilibrium, in the equanimity. That is the Nibbana. So they are talking about the fourth jhana as the Nibbana. Now, after explaining all these seven, all these five, actually Buddha again mentioned, okay, Buddha has understood all this. These monks are those other matters, profound, hard to see. And people can get trapped even today in this. Certain people sometimes, they simply sit to attain whatever the jhana, and they consider that is their bliss, that is their escape, and that is the Nibbana, that is the complete freedom, because they can cut off from the whole world. While they are in the jhana, they can't feel much. They don't need to know about whatever the societal problems, whatever the family problems, whatever the worldly problems. They don't have to worry about them, because they are in a complete kind of a trance, completely attained, absorbed into a jhana. So it's a completely blissful state of mind, uplifted state of mind. And so while they are there, so they are completely away from the world, so they consider that as the Nibbana, which is available in this very life. And Buddha say, okay, I have understood the peril in it. I have understood the drawbacks in all these wrong views. I have gone beyond this. And whoever proclaiming this sort of wrong view and adhering to it, and ultimately what's going to happen after death, that also I know. Say, for example, if someone has attained the first jhana and he is really happy with it, again and again attain to it, really find it as a sort of a treasure, and mastering it, maybe at the end of the death he can attain the Brahma realm. Depending on the depth, they can either go to the lower first Jhanic Brahma realm, second or third. And but the unfortunate thing is, it is not permanent. Because whatever the defilements, whatever the sense pleasures, what they have abandoned are all temporary. So complete suppression, kind of a temporary suppression what they have done. So at the end of that particular lifespan, again he has to return to a lower realm. Maybe to a sense pleasure, sense related divine realm, or even beyond that to the human realm. And then it is not guaranteed what's going to happen to him. He may end up with, even after the death here, he might even go to the hell realm. So all these solutions are not in a way giving a permanent solution. So they are all temporary suppression of the defilements. Now, after having all understood, so Buddha mentioned, okay, Buddha has understood all this, abandoned that knowledge, completely liberated, and this is something that if one want to truly praise him, is a sublime quality that Buddha to be praised. Important thing, again, what we need to understand is that, say, only a very minority that people are getting involved with spiritual practice. But majority of them get trapped in any of these wrong views. So that is where the Buddha's sort of direction, Buddha's guidance is very important. So his, whatever the task is, really praiseable, because he was able to understood all these tanglements. Now he is explaining, okay, these are the 62 possibilities. Check whether you are trapped in any of these. If so, you are trapped. You are not liberated. And these are, in a way, are traps laid by the Mara. Now people are already trapped when they are completely indulging the sense pleasures. They are completely obsessed by it. So they are already trapped. They are under the realm in the of the Mara. But whoever want to escape from that, they are now going through some spiritual achievement. But unfortunately, they are also trapped in these 62, either one or many of these 62 wrong views. All these 62 wrong views are also certain traps, we can say, laid by the Mara. So 62 wrong views are awaiting, in a way, to trapped, to get sort of attracted. So when we are continuing our practice. So in a way, these are sort of pitfalls we can get onto, we can drop into, we can fall into. And these are very much like traps available, kept by the Mara for the spiritual people. And after explaining all these 44 speculations with respect to the future, again, Buddha highlights, okay, these are the possibilities with respect to the future existence, future life. And I have understood all these 44 possibilities, nothing more than this. So altogether 62, nothing more than this. So all these viewpoints Buddha understood, but he didn't grasp any of these. And he knows, and he is not attached to any of these. He is completely liberated from these. And these are the important things that Buddha to be praised. These are the profound and in a way difficult, hard to understand, only possible to understand by the wise. So these are the traps that Buddha has penetrated. Buddha has understood really well. So understand. So realizing that, okay, he is proclaiming the path, so that others also can go through. Others also can overcome all these wrong views. So here's something that if we want to really truthfully praise the Buddha, this is something sublime that Buddha to be praised. Actually, typical people don't know about this. Typical people don't know the depth of this. Whoever spiritual guy talking of these and whoever proclaiming any of these, sometimes those typical other uninstructed worldlings are blindly following. Say for example, one meditator assume that he may attain some sort of a jhana, and he say, okay, I'm attaining nibbana. So this particular jhana, this particular concentration is so sublime, so say blissful. Okay, now I am able to attain that. Okay, I have achieved it. I have attained that. And even so, these people simply proclaim that to the others. They simply even explain that to the others. Others also start following that. So that's the kind of danger in a way. Not only they themselves get trapped, not only they themselves start believing it, but even they start spreading it. Even they start talking about it, explaining it. And many others start following it. Now he has many followers, now he is spreading that particular wrong view. And many, many others are blindly following it. Probably they haven't yet achieved it, but they also may be trying hard to achieve it. And probably you can remember a few examples, say during the Buddha's time, that Alarakalama, who has attained the nothingness, and he considered that as the Nibbana. Uddhakaramaputta, he has attained Neva Sanyana Asanyayatana, and he considered that as the Nibbana. And here actually the fourth jhana can include all those Arupa jhana as well. So Arupa jhanas are different flavors of fourth jhana. And so they consider that as the Nibbana. But the Buddha to be the Prince Siddhartha, so he didn't believe it. He was not satisfied with it. And he understood, okay, this is not the Nibbana. I have to go beyond this. And certain others, sometimes they even start lamenting after losing the jhana, because they consider, okay, this is a real achievement. I have to be there, I have to dwell in that. So this is the complete emancipation. Whenever they get sick, they can't achieve it, so they start even lamenting. So even such stories are there. So likewise, whatever attainments, whatever meditative attainments, and after attaining, attaching to that, or after attaining, reflecting on that, and coming up with a conclusion, and then adhering to a view prepared based upon that experience, all are possibilities. That's why we get into another session, kind of a analysis of all these. And we have some more to discuss. Anyway, now all the 62 views are briefly discussed and we have completed that. And we'll have a few more sessions, what Buddha giving as solutions to overcome this, and again what other suttas are talking about the wrong views, consequences of wrong views. We have another few more sessions. And with that, I like to conclude today's sutta teaching session. Now I open the session for questions. Yeah, you have?
Yes.
Okay, there's a question coming from Venerable Dhamma Vijita, so we listen to him.
Thank you, Bhante. Thank you for the teaching. A couple of things came to mind. One is that all these views are based on a self, so that's already a misconception that the Buddha proved. Is that right?
So that's what one important thread in each and every view is, that they are believing of an existing self, existing individual, existing person, I am. So something that is very much like accepted. So based on that, either they are talking up of eternalism, partial eternalism, or maybe future existence, survival, all that of that self. True. Or even the annihilation of that self.
Yeah.
Even the annihilation thinking, okay, there is an existing self, that self is going to annihilate, isn't it?
Yeah.
So that's a difference actually we need to understand clearly. But according to the Buddha's teaching, what he's telling is these are five aggregates. They have certain causes to each and every aggregate. So when these causes are available, so these aggregates are coming and disappearing, appearing and disappearing, appearing and disappearing, appearing and disappearing. It's a kind of momentary kind of a flow, momentary process going on, even to the material aspect, immaterial aspect. The form aggregate, feeling aggregate, perceptions aggregate, formations aggregate, consciousness aggregate, each and every aggregate, they have their contributing parts, contributing causes. Whenever those causes are available, okay, instances. So the moments of these aggregates are coming to existence, within a moment they disappear. Next moment also the causes have to come in. Then again existence, then again the appearance of the five aggregates, again the disappearance.
Yeah.
It's a kind of a momentary appearance and disappearance, momentary arising and passing away. That is how the whole continuum going through.
Mm-hmm.
So in this completely transient process, so that's how we can argue, in this completely transient process, how can there be an eternal soul? How can there be an eternal I, existing person, existing individual?
Mm-hmm.
So whatever the form is coming and going, arising and passing away, feelings arising and passing away, perceptions arising and passing away, say whatever thoughts, intentions arising and passing away, consciousness also arising and passing away. So that's why Buddha say, without taking any of these this either existence or non-existence, I am talking about the teaching from the middle. When there is this is going to arise. With the absence of this is not going to arise. That is the Patisamuppada, the dependent origination. So nothing is completely independent, everything happens due to causes. Is completely rejecting this Adichcha Samuppannavada. You know, there are two wrong views. Adichcha Samuppannavada, where they are talking about mere chance, that completely rejected. Instead of he is talking about the Patisamuppanna. Things are dependently arisen. So when this exists, this is also going to exist. When this, with the arising of this is also going to arise.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a kind of dependently arisen process every time going on.
Yeah.
So when the ignorance is available, there's a possibility of formations to arise. With the arising of ignorance, formations are also arising. But if there is no ignorance, there can't be formations. With the cessation of ignorance, formations also going to cease. Now, on the other hand, we can simply argue using a simile given by the Buddha. Say, you are maintaining a fire. There are firewoods available. So you need oxygen, you need the firewood, the heat, everything is available, then the fire continues. But the moment that you kept them aside and you extinguish the fire, so then the necessary causes are not available. And the flames will simply extinguish. That's it. So the flames were existed because the necessary causes were continually supplied, isn't it? Oxygen was supplied, fuel was supplied, air was there, and everything, those causes are available continuously, so the fire existed. But when the causes are abandoned, causes are taken away, so the fire can't exist, fire simply extinguish, isn't it?
Yeah.
And one can't ask, okay, where the fire has gone? It's an irrelevant question, isn't it? Because the fire is a mere condition process. It was dependent on those causes. And then when the causes are abandoned, when the causes were taken out, the result also will disappear.
Yeah. Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
I guess the fire would, we could say that's the what we consider to be the self, that
self,
lust.
And this fire aggregates. Fire aggregates.
That we're
clinging. Fire is simply the fire aggregates.
Mm.
There is nothing inside the fire. If someone is telling, okay, there is some soul inside the fire, so these are mere fabrication. So when we are talking about these fire aggregates, if someone is telling, okay, inside the fire aggregates, there's an existing self, that's a kind of a fabrication.
That's not aggregates, so like the firewood.
Firewood and the oxygen and all that causes are there. The aggregates are like the fire, the flame, the result.
Once we cling to them,
That is the cause. Cause is the tanha, the craving.
Yes.
So till the craving is there, the fire will go through. So the upadana, the clinging.
Yes.
So the upadana term has one meaning as the fuel, another meaning as the clinging.
Fuel and clinging are clinging upadana.
So basically when you are clung to something, so that becomes the fuel for continuation.
Yeah.
The upadana paccaya bahu. So when you are clinging to something, when you are grasping to something, you feel you feel kind of an existence. I am there, I am existing, I am here, I am so and so. So the wrong notion of existence come to being when clinging happens, when grasping happens. But if we are able to maintain a mind without clinging, without grasping, then such a mind can't feel an existence of an I, existence of a person. The life may continue. He may eat, he may go, he may talk, but not being a person, by merely a process is continuing. Something like that.
Yes.
That's how I understood, and according to the teaching, I feel, so that is the way that Buddha is talking here. So when the necessary causes are there, there's a notion of, there's a possibility of consciousness to get established. When there are no causes, when the ignorance is abandoned, so this particular consciousness can't establish. Say, vijnana paccaya nama rupa. Say, avijja paccaya sankhara, sankhara paccaya vijnana, vijnana paccaya nama rupa. Say, when the ignorance is there, it conditions formations. When formations are available, it conditions the consciousness to get tangled with the name and form. Suppose, instead of ignorance, if the mind has wisdom, so then ignorance is not available, then the formations can't activate. So the mind become, ceased, the consciousness becomes ceased, the formations are not available, so the name and form can't manifest. So the consciousness has to cease, it has to become unestablished. Calmness, tranquility, so the mind become unestablished. So this is how we can understand according to the teaching. And so that's it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
And also, it's, the Buddha is explaining these views and how they lead to bad destination, how they are not true.
Mm.
But also, the people who are holding these views, just by their own presence, you would know that it was a wrong view.
Mm.
That they're saying, that this is a way to follow. This, my view is correct. It's good. If you were to observe that person, they would show that just by their actions that they're still attached to defilements and
definitely.
So just by seeing the person and observing the person, you could see that their view is wrong, that they're not somebody to follow.
I'm not following you because someone is making a noise. Rohan, you are making a noise. Can you repeat the question?
Yes, I guess the Buddha explains intellectually or theoretically why the views aren't true, but if we were to see one of the people that is holding the view, you could obviously see that this person is not like the ascetics that were following the Buddha, and the Supiya was their leader. He was looking at his ascetics and they were just
arguing,
like, just not didn't look like they were at peace or secure. So there's, you can see that these people aren't following the right path. They're not, you wouldn't trust them to follow them because they're not sublime, they're not, they haven't let go of defilements.
Correct.
And so forth.
Correct. I mean, whenever someone is adhering to a view, there is, of course, that the Ditti Upadana is there, as well as the Silabbata Upadana also can into come, and again the Attavada Upadana also can cause. What I mean was, say, when someone is adhering to a view, he may start following certain rituals, he may start following certain observances, and even sometimes he preach those observances to the others, and he want to protect that view, he want to guard that view, and he want to highlight that view. Because that highlight, that promotion can promote a self. So this is my view. So I am the teacher. I am the one going to teach this view. I am the one correctly knowing. All others' views are wrong. My views is correct. So the Attavada Upadana also coming to be. Attavada Upadana means you recognize yourself as a person, as an individual, as a self. So that's another grasping, another Upadana. So the Ditti Upadana can lead to Attavada Upadana also. Ditti Upadana, whenever someone is holding on to a view, automatically there's a possibility that, okay, I am having this view, okay, I need to attack someone's views, that is not correct. My view is correct. So that he is believing an existing I also.
Yes.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
So they always... certain existence of an I, myself, individual, personality, is there.
So all the argumentation and so forth of these people holding views is also a proof that they are clinging to
some sort of a self.
Yeah.
As an individual, as a person, they want to protect themselves, they want to protect their view, their viewpoint, and they want to reject someone else's view, look down someone else's view. So the arguments, conflicts, all that is possible. Probably you can remember when in the Madhupindika Sutta, when Dandapani, the Shakyan, and when he came and asked from the Buddha, what is your view? Then Buddha say, okay, my view is simply in a way not get into any arguments with others. Can't have any quarrels, can't have any arguments, and the more than that, there are some certain very sophisticated ones. He is telling, okay, none of the perceptions go and remain in the mind, someone's. What is called sanya nanusenti. The certain perceptions, certain signs, marks may not remain in the mind. They simply come and go without making a permanent scar, embodiment. They simply go away. So the mind has to be completely freed.
Yes.
Completely freed. And that freedom, when someone is enjoying, experiencing, so he can't argue. He can't defend because there is no one to defend.
Yeah. Yes. So Buddha really exemplified this non-clinging.
Non-clinging.
He never went to argue with
others, yeah. But interesting thing is
sometimes
that
he didn't even reply when people argued.
So sometimes people came and argued with him, and sometimes he had to convince others.
Yeah.
Now, say for example, in the Mahavagga, say that ascetics, the Jatilas are there, Uruvela Kassapa, Nadi Kassapa, Gaya Kassapa. So they are ascetics, and they believe that they are arahants. So Buddha has to convince them. He has to preach and he has to even show certain miracles to convince them. And certain other times, say, sometimes people come and argue with him, like Satchaka. He come and start debating with him. But in general, Buddha became silent, or simply, you know, whoever coming and asking, he can simply preach, but maintain that silent sermon. Without purposely going after people to argue.
So we can use this in a way to conduct ourselves to see, you know, can we just be calm and not going out to attack in any way. And also to see if somebody's attacking us, we don't have to respond or to, you know, make a argument for ourselves or something. We can just let it go.
Yeah, that's here also happening. So as Buddha is advising here, when someone is criticizing, so if we feel disgusted, if we feel disparaged, so then again we our mind become imbalanced. So when someone is blaming, someone is criticizing, are we able to maintain a balanced mind? That's again a kind of an opportunity that we can, you know, use to verify our practice. So are we capable enough to maintain an untroubled mind, isn't it? Even when someone is criticizing. On the other hand, when someone is praising, without being, you know, boosted ourselves, boosted an ego, are we able to still maintain an equanimous mind? It's a kind of a mature way of, you know, going through the life situations.
I think there's a way we could practice this, is because, you know, my tendency is to take things personally, feel attacked sometimes. So knowing, like, going into a situation where you might feel attacked, just say to yourself, maybe don't respond quickly. Because what we tend to do is, I mean, if we're feeling that way, is we want to respond very quickly and defend ourselves. So just... taking a moment, pausing, being mindful of the body, and then not having that,
not impulsively react.
Because as soon as we react, then there is a, we've created a self, we've sort of attached to some belief, like the other's belief.
Whenever we want to defend, so that shows that there is a person here. So that person being attacked. We take it for we take it, the whole thing, as a personal experience, personal attack. So he's attacking me. So that's how we take it. So as that's why in a certain other place that Buddha say, okay, if you have no upadhi, if you have no acquisitions to boost a self, if you have no acquisitions to prepare a self, then where are these attacks going to hit? Something like that. So when nirupadi, when one is in the nirupadi state, there are no acquisitions, so then he doesn't feel a person here, then he don't feel an attack also. A very, very, I mean, very high model in a way, high teaching. As we, I mean, neva attato no parato daheya, pusanti passa upading paticca nirupading kena pusayyum passa. Gami aranye sukadukka putto neva attato no parato daheta pusanti passa upading paticca nirupading kena pusayyum passa. So that the advice given in the one of the Udanas. So Buddha say, okay, to the monks, so when you are in the monastery, when you are in the outside city, when someone is criticized, don't consider the situation as me and others, me and outsiders. Neva attato no parato. Me and not me. Don't consider like that. Pusanti passa upadim paticca. All these, you know, impingements happen when acquisitions are available. Acquisitions, and then say you have created a self using various attributes. Okay, I am a monk. am a respectable person, I am a senior monk, or I am a follower of the Buddha, I am so and so, I am a rich person, I am an educated person, I am a king, I am a queen, whatever, you know, that. So these are the selves that we have created, yes, using various acquisitions, using maybe our education, maybe our religion, maybe our meditation, maybe our understanding, maybe our social situation, social state, our relatives, our children. So using many different attributes, one can create a self. Now, whenever we being hurt, that is because that whatever the impingements coming from the outside are hitting any of these created attributes.
Mm-hmm.
So now Buddha is telling, Nirupadhin kena pusayum passa. If there is no such upadhis, when one is able to completely abandon the acquisitions, then where are these impingements going to hit? No place to hit.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting teaching.
So he's giving us the most, you know, perfect way. Solution is the Four Noble Truths.
Mm.
You know.
Mm. Correct.
Suffering, and it arises
because of certain causes. Clinging, yes.
Craving.
Mm. If you are able to abandon that clinging, okay, you're free.
Yeah. Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
Deep teaching.
We can come to your side, Jennifer.
Thank you. I'd like to invite Gershon for the next question.
Dhruvan Sarmai Bhante.
Yeah.
I hope you can hear me.
Yes.
I really enjoy the discussion with Dhamma Vichita. There are quite a bit of good points that sort of surface as well. You know, you were talking about some of the things that not only came in the Madhupindika Sutra that I can sort of relate to, the phrase Sanya Jnanasanti. I have heard that in the Anapanasati Sutra as well, and it is so fascinating. When I start listening to this discussion, I was thinking, you know, like how profound Buddha was, just even to go into that minute detail,
mm-hmm,
to talk about how these signals comes to us and then how we grasp, and without thinking that they are like a mirage or you know, miringua in Sinhala.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I thought I should sort of bring that particular instance because of Venerable Dhamma Vijita's discussion as well.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that I wanted to ask from this series, The Wrong Views, I think if I'm not wrong, it's 51 or 52. It talks about four elements where our body is made from mother and the father. And but it doesn't, does it sort of talk about the consciousness there? Because I think that itself, is that the reason why it becomes a wrong view? Because we believe that our body is made only from four elements?
Four elements. So when we are talking about the body, typically it is considered the, you know, what is coming from the mother and father, and again coming from the kabalinkara ahar, the material food. So all that, what ultimately the body being constructed, prepared.
Right. So my question, maybe I didn't see, does it consider the consciousness, or does it not consider the consciousness in that room? For them who call of Buddha to call that it is one of the wrong views, thinking that the body is only made out of four elements.
Now, there are wrong views, as you see that in the, for example, one view of Uchedavada. So they simply consider this body is what existing. There is no mental aspect. So if there is, that is totally dependent on the body. So without a body, these mental aspects can't exist. So anyway, after the death, this whole body going to perish, going to disappear. This body is made up of the four elements. And so this body going to vanish. So therefore, this whole self going to annihilate. So that is one wrong view, which they are talking about the Uchedavada. That is the 51st wrong view. This self is material, composed of the four great elements, product of mother and father. And at the end of the breaking of the body, that's after the death, nothing exists, going to annihilate.
Yes, yes. That's what I remember.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so it doesn't address the consciousness there. Right?
It doesn't particularly mention, but even if it is there, what they say is, okay, it is totally dependent on the body. Now, even today, certain scientists, they say like that, okay, the consciousness is there, but it's a product of the brain. You can't have a consciousness without the brain. So, therefore, at the death, the brain, the body going to perish, body going to disappear, so the consciousness also going to completely disappear. So, they are talking about the Uchedavada, annihilationism.
Very good, very good.
Mm-hmm.
So, there is, I think, even Buddha asked from his first disciple, one of the monks, can consciousness exist without nama rupa, and vice versa as well, right? So I was thinking, so for name and form, of course, those are the four elements that has comes together, and with that, we or I become. Exists, I guess.
Mm-hmm. So that is actually that we are talking of the Patisamuppada. So the name and form and consciousness are in a kind of a tangle, in a kind of a interrelationship. The consciousness conditions name and form conditions consciousness. And it's a kind of mutual relationship is there. For all this to happen, the ignorance has to be available. Ignorance causes conditions, ignorance causes fabrications, and when the fabrications are available, the consciousness can establish with the name and form. Actually, name and form can't appear without fabrications, without ignorance. Suppose the mind is now at least temporary free from ignorance, then the mind has to stop all the formations. The sabbasankhara samatha has to happen even at a short period. So the mind has to stop all the formations, because only when ignorance is available, the formations going to happen. If there is no ignorance, the formations has to completely cease. Mind has to stop. The consciousness has to cease. So we can say at that moment, it becomes anidassana. It doesn't represent anything. It doesn't show anything. It's completely become kind of luminous or transparent. So no name and form is visualized. No name and form is manifested. And so the consciousness is not tangled in name and form. So that means the absence of the conditioned consciousness. Abhisankata vijnana. The conditioned consciousness, prepared consciousness, established consciousness is not available. But the unmanifested one, say, what we call the kind of transparent consciousness is continuing, but that we can't say is something conditioned. Anidassana vijnana, appatittita vijnana, so these are the terms that we are using into the supramundane side, where the mind become completely luminous, transparent, no name and form is visualized, no name and form is present. So there is no any kind of a manifestation of a being, of a person. Just a mere experience is there. and say mind is not tangled at anywhere. It's kind of freed mind.
So is that the, I think what I have understood also, in that free mind state where no thoughts are being sort of generated or, and then you also mentioned there is the way that I understood, there is a sort of a shadow always large sort of goes behind, but it's like the secondary sort of formations, but it just like moves away like the clouds per se.
Now I think I like to explain this at two different way. So one way is that when someone is not attained the arahantship, but the defilements are completely uprooted. So an arahant is simply maintaining his day-to-day awareness, as explained in the Sona Sutta. So selo yatha eka ghano vatena na samirati evam rupa rasa sadda gandha pansa cha kevala ittha dhamma anittha cha napavedini tadino titan cittang vipamuttang vayan chassanu passati, as in the Sona Sutta, where he mentioned, okay, his mind is unwavering, his mind is very much stable, even though sights, sounds, smells, tastes, tangibles, thoughts are happening, they can't make any kind of a shift of this mind. They can't make any turbulence in this mind. So his mind is completely tranquil, completely peaceful, without getting entangled, without getting tangled with any of these sense impingements. Titang chittang. So the mind is completely stable, stilled, vipamuttang, liberated from all the defilements. Vayan chassanu passati. So whatever these sense impingements happening, so he can see how they are coming and going, arising and passing away, arising and passing away. So this is the typical state of the arahant when he is not in an attainment. But on the other hand, when he is in the arahantship, or what we can say the attainment of arahantship, arahattapala samadhi, there we can say he is experiencing it to the supreme level, where the mind is completely unestablished, all the six sense bases are seized, and the consciousness is completely unestablished, and he's simply being in the Nibbana, Sopadisesa Nibbana, in its supreme form, where the six sense bases are seized. So the consciousness is completely unestablished. No name and form available. So the mind has come to the complete rest. That is explained in the, say, in the Kevadda Sutta. Vinyanang anidassanang anantang sabbato pabhang. Yattapocha patavi tejo vayo nagadati. So where the mind has come to that complete calmness, tranquility, stillness, so that typical vijnana is no more. Typical conditioned consciousness is no more. Instead, the complete clarity of the mind, unestablished state of the mind, is experienced.
Thank you, Pante.
Yeah.
It was very nicely sort of talked about, but I have to check on this Kevaddha Sutra as well at some point in time.
Kevaddha Sutta. Kevaddha Sutta coming in the Diganikaya, the last verse available there. It's a deep sutta, and this is a kind of a debatable area, even that particular verse.
Very good. Thank you so much. Tunuran Charanai Bhakti.
Yeah, Therwan Sanai.
Thank you, Bhante. I don't believe there's any more questions on our side.
Right. Okay, then there is no more questions from our side also, then we'll wind up the session. So we have spent 1.5 hours discussing Buddha's teachings and few suttas, and all this may cause to generate some merits. We'll share all these merits with celestial beings, past relatives and whoever in need of merits. And we wish these merits help us also to attain path, fruition, nibbana. We'll recite the traditional verses. Ittavataca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ittavataca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ittavataca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang
sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya.
Akasattha ca
bhummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyam tangana bodhitva charam rakkam tripasanam. Akasattha ca bhummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyam tangana bodhitva charam rakkam tripasanam.
Akasattha ca bhummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyam tangana anumoditva charam rakkam tumamparam. Idam vo nyati nam hotu
sukhita hum junateyo. Idam vo nyati nam hotu sukhita hum junateyo. Idam vo nyati nam hotu sukhita hum junateyo.
Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya.
Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo
satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya.
Imina
punya kammena mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Thank you, Bhante. Therwan Sanai.
Therwan Sanai.